Hey, listeners, John Word is the guest today. He wrote a book about Huey Piano Smith. Interesting book. It's funny because I was away for a couple of weeks, and when I came back, I started to do some research about Huey Smith and found out that he had been interviewed by Rex, whose show airs right before my show here on WFMU just a few weeks ago. Yeah, it's a small world. So if you didn't get enough about Huey Piano Smith and John Wirt's book, check Rex's archive. I think it's wfmu.org/Rex, but you'll figure it out. The Fool's Paradise program. I highly recommend it anyway. Anyway, lots of good stuff coming up. Check wfmu.org/Michael for the full list and the archives, of course. Now, my interview with Sean. Piano Smith there on the Fun 91. John Word, I believe, joins us. Good morning, John. How are you?
Hey, Michael.
You are in Baton Rouge, is that correct?
Yeah, Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I really enjoyed this book for a lot of reasons. One is that just because it tells the story of New Orleans music broadly, from, you know, the days before R&B as we know it sort of was the thing until now, basically. And Huey Smith rubs, you know, all kinds of characters pass through this guy's life and career and his band. So it really is a great introduction to just the history of New Orleans R&B music that is so, you know, so great. And in some ways that music is not as, I think, as popular as it could be, partly because no giant record labels were located there, and all these guys made lots and lots of records on lots of little labels, and they're sort of dispersed into the wind a little bit.
That's right. There were a lot of local labels in New Orleans, Instant Records, and Ace Records was located in Jackson, Mississippi, but a lot of Ace Records artists came from New Orleans and Baton Rouge, for instance. And Ace Records is a label, an independent label in the Deep South, and they released Huey's records and Frankie Ford's records and Earl King records and lots of artists, but Frankie Ford, Earl King, and Huey Smith are the biggest names from Ace Records.
Where did Huey learn to play the piano? Because you listen to the piano of Rockin' Pneumonia there, and it is such a, you know, codifying sound, and it is, you know, how much of that was Huey's thing, and how much of it was his adding on to what he learned? Where did he pick it up from?
Well, in New Orleans, in that time, in the 1940s and before, it seemed like everybody had a piano. Everybody played some piano. Alan Toussaint, I just heard him say that. Now, Alan is one of Huey's peers, and Alan's better known than Huey. Alan's a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, wrote so many songs and produced so many great songs. Alan said everybody played piano, and I've heard this from Huey, too, in that time. So everybody's playing piano, but Huey is somebody that got really serious about it, and he would practice and practice and practice and annoy the neighbors in the split shotgun that they live in. You know, they call it a double shotgun. It's two families living in one structure, and the only thing separating them is a wall. So Hugh would be on his side of the wall playing piano, annoying his neighbors, and he would just play and play and play. And although his father gave him money to study, Huey never spent the money on lessons. He just spent the money on going to the movies. He taught himself, basically, but he had people he admired, Professor Longhair, and many of the piano players you'd hear before Huey, like Amos Milburn. He loved those piano players, but it was many, many piano players that he listened to and learned from.
It is amazing that he taught himself. Can he read music?
No.
It's quite amazing that he just comes from that tradition. Yet it's also hard to believe that there was a time before the Beatles when everyone didn't play guitar, when everyone played piano. You know, it's just a different world, especially in a place like New Orleans. So in the sort of lineage of New Orleans piano players, how is Huey looked at now? Does he have a place there?
Well, Huey is known in New Orleans as a piano player. Of course, his middle name, given to him by Guitar Slim, is Huey Piano Smith. His real name is Huey Pierce Smith. So Huey is one of the piano players among Alan Toussaint, Professor Longhair, That's Domino, Eddie Bowe, and numerous others. He's one of those guys, but Huey is beyond piano because he is, in a similar way, like Alan Toussaint, he's the guy who had a vision. Huey Smith and the Clowns, his group, he had the vision for that, which is piano, him writing songs, him producing sessions, him arranging the songs for an ensemble of vocalists, because Huey's records is not one singer on a music track, it's multiple singers.
Yeah, we've been listening.
It's also the band, too.
We've been listening to some Huey Smith tracks as we led up to the interview today, and I was commenting, you could tell this guy maybe his vocal range, which is quite charming, I think, but it's kind of limited, and so he surrounds himself with four lead singers, and they all swap, and they come in and out, and they all have that Huey Smith thing, you know, it's kind of the trademark soup, sort of, that makes it those records. I mean, he put his own band together and had a hit pretty quickly on Ace, right?
Rocky Pneumonia and the Boogie Woogie Flu was his first hit. It was a big R&B hit in 1957, and it was, I guess you'd call it, a minor pop hit in 57. And then Johnny Rivers comes along in 72 and records it all those years later. And it's a huge pop hit. I think it's a number four pop hit in 72 for Johnny Rivers. Huey, Rocky Pneumonia launched him as a name on the record. And before that, he'd been a piano session player, and he'd already been writing songs. Some people had already recorded his songs, too. So Rocky Pneumonia, yeah, that's his entry into, really, R&B stardom of that era.
I mean, he's best known for Just Don't You Just Know It, Rockin' Pneumonia, and I would say Sea Cruise. Now, the story behind Sea Cruise is fascinating because, and tell me if I've got it right here, basically he writes it and records it with his band, and he sings it sort of as a duet, and then behind his back, Johnny Vincent takes his vocals off and puts Frankie Ford's on, and then that's the Sea Cruise that 99% of people know. Is that what happened?
That sounds like the correct story. But Frankie Ford's manager, Joe Corona, was the first person to start this, and as Huey explained it, Johnny Vincent just went along with it, because it's the time of the 1959-58, the time of the teen idols, Elvis Presley, Frankie Avalon, Fabian, and all those cats, you know. So, here you have Frankie Ford, who has a wonderful voice, who has a lot of experience in music, had been a performer since childhood, and so Joe Corona is managing Frankie Ford, and he thinks, we have a chance for another Elvis Presley or another Fabian here, because we have this young guy, he's 18 years old. We're going to put him on this song. And that's what they did, and Huey couldn't stop them from doing that. But he originally recorded Sea Cruise to be a Huey Smith and the Clowns record.
I suppose if Huey had been paid for all the Frankie Ford records, in the end it would have been better for him than, you know, if they had just only put out his own recording of it, which probably would have sold well, but probably never gotten that pop exposure. That,
well, you want to remember that Don't You Just Know It was a number nine pop hit in 1958. And Huey, that's a big hit.
Yeah, that's a big hit anytime.
I've read it was a million seller. And that precedes Sea Cruise. So, and you might say that Huey's vocals on Sea Cruise are not great.
I love it.
He knew he wasn't a great singer, and that's usually why he surrounded himself with other singers. But take Shirley and Lee, Let the Good Times Roll. Okay, Shirley is sharp, Lee is flat, and they have a number one pop hit. So we really don't know what would have happened.
That's
if
fine.
Huey's record released with his voice on it.
We don't know, but I'm conjecturing. Yeah, and Huey worked for Shirley and Lee for a while back, and one of the many folks, like I said, in this book, which is called Huey Piano Smith and the Rock and Pneumonia Blues by John Wirt, who is our guest, one of the many legendary figures that kind of move in and out of the book. So, Sea Cruise, one of the things, is it the exact same track that the two records are?
The music track is exactly the same.
That's kind of a surprise to me, because I had figured that these records mostly were 100% live and unoverdubbable, but that's one thing I learned in this book, that I guess they were putting on vocals after the in some cases.
Well, this was done at Cosmo Matassa's studio there in the French Quarter in New Orleans, and Cosmo got into recording in the late 40s and started his first studio. And at that point, you know, the technology advanced to the point where they had tracks. It might have been 4-track at that point. I'm not sure about that, but obviously they had at least 2 tracks.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they're great records. So let's go to the second part of your book. I mean, it is an exhaustively researched recounting of the legal problems of Huey Smith. And just those 3 songs, Don't You Just Know It, Rockin' Pneumonia, and Sea Cruise, are enough to really, if one person were to get all the money from them, they would be enough to live comfortably on, I would think, since 1958. Every year, those generate a nice little living. Not a fortune, but a nice little living. But Huey never quite got it, and you sort of in the book you the main thing it seems to be is that Johnny Vincent produces a contract which is fake, which is backdated and has a fake signature on it, and from that lots of problems stem, and part of them is that Huey then engages the services of lawyers to get him out of that, who are almost just as bad as Johnny Vincent in the first place. Is that sort of right?
You know, it's a complicated long story, and believe me, I had to go through all kinds of papers and court transcripts and things like that. And it's interesting that one of the lawyers who represented Huey is now Judge Richard Lynn in Washington, D.C., on the second highest court in the United States. And so, again, a lot of people went in and out of this. There were so many lawyers who were with Huey for a very brief time. It's a complicated, complex thing. Jason Berry is one of the great writers in New Orleans, and he wrote this wonderful book called Up from the Cradle of Jazz, New Orleans Music Since World War II. And Jason read this book before it was published, and he described Huey's legal tangles as Kafka-esque. And one day I was at Huey's house, and there was another fellow there. We were talking about these problems with the legal situation. And Huey said, it's like a horror movie. So it's, and you know, it's funny, he laughed when he said that. He can laugh at this stuff as much as it hurt him. I guess it's one way to survive, is to laugh at these troubles. And that's something that Dr. John says in the book, that when a lot of the guys from New Orleans get together, they laugh and they joke, because they don't want to remember it being such a drag.
Yeah.
As far as the business goes. But they love the music, and that's why they did it in the first place, and why many of them kept doing it.
It is interesting. Throughout the book, and I emailed you about this, you reveal this portrait of this guy, and you were, I believe, writing for a newspaper in Baton Rouge, and Huey had read some of your pieces and thought, this is a guy who seems to understand me. And from that, you guys started to meet regularly and do interviews, and that's kind of what a lot of the book is taken from, Huey's own story. And then you kind of flesh it out by getting the sort of Rashomon point of view from other folks who were around at the time. So it's very filled out. But you get this, he's definitely a victim, and he's definitely wrote some incredible songs, and he put together this great band, but he also seems a little bit like his own worst enemy. He makes some terrible choices, but he makes them himself, you know? And he also seems kind of stubborn to the point of spiting himself, almost. And he seems naive at times, clever at times, and like you said, he's happy at times and bitter at times. And he seems like a super complex guy.
Huey is enigmatic. And can I say that I totally understand him, even after having written a book about him? No, I can't say that.
That's interesting.
One of the things his first wife said when she met him, she said he was charming, he was funny, he was so talented. The kids were so impressed that at the high school he could play as well as he did, and he was just a teenager. And said, but there was something about him. He would look at you, and like he had something in his mind that he was not going to tell you.
It's very strange. I mean, yeah, because even today he could be out there making personal appearances and, you know, sort of having a career, which he doesn't do, and who knows why. Let's talk about religion. Religion is a big part of this guy's life. When you meet him, do you feel that? Do you see that? Has that helped him?
The Jehovah's Witness, he is a Jehovah's Witness, and he's very devout, and they study the Bible, and it became the focus of his life, you know, after music, the Witnesses. So, I think it did. I say in the book that his study of this and his association with the other Witnesses, and that the friendships that they have, and it's really kind of I've been to the Kingdom Hall, that's what they call it, where they worship, and it's really sort of, it's very gentle, very quiet. There's nothing raucous about it, I was impressed by the quality of their conversation and the gentleness of these people, and I've heard other people associated with the Witnesses say the same sort of thing about them. So yeah, I think it definitely helped them. You know, many people when they hit the bottom, they turn to a higher power. And I think that's what Huey did.
Yeah, or a lower power sometimes, but better in his case. Yeah, I mean, he went bankrupt. He ended up doing lawn work for people. I mean, it's like the full story. And then through the whole time, like you said, it's lawyers and more lawyers and lawyers to sue the first lawyers and judges who sort of seem corrupt or at least to have a chip on their shoulder. And so where is it now? Is it now that he does not own the publishing to the songs?
In the bankruptcy that he had, the songs were sold to Warner Chappell. And, of course, that's Warner Chappell. That's Warner Brothers. That's really a huge company. For $1 million, that was the price on those four songs, High Blood Pressure, Rock and Pneumonia, Don't You Just Know It's Secrets, those four specific songs. And so in the bankruptcy, Huey lost the North American rights to those four songs, which are his biggest songs. I mean, if you're going to cherry-pick any songs, you would cherry-pick those songs.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, I mean, that's what people wouldn't be interested in unless they were valuable. So they were sold. Now, he out of the bankruptcy, he retained foreign royalties, foreign rights to those four songs. And I've heard, you know, pretty recently from Huey's wife that most of the income they get is foreign income.
Interesting. So that would be mechanical royalties, records.
Well, that would be everything. Everything that all the various streams of royalties that come with a song.
But he's already got his BMI, his airplay royalties for any versions of those songs. He always gets those, right? You can't sell that.
Well, those were sold.
Really?
As I understand, at one point you couldn't sell them, but then it was changed and you could sell. The BMI royalties. The BMI was so good for him because that's the income that he had for so many years, even from the beginning. Although Johnny Vincent put his name on the songs, on many of the songs, as the co-writer, which wasn't true because Johnny didn't write any songs. But that's something that producers and record company people did back in that time. They would put their name on a composer's song, and then they would get half the income.
So is journalism changing his life? Will this book put the spotlight on him a little bit and get him out of the house, you think?
You know, I doubt it. We tried; they tried to get him at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival this past April, and that's to the Heritage stage where they do interviews, and his wife said, we just can't do it. Huey is 80 now. He's got arthritis, which is severe, and he walks just a short distance, and he doesn't stand for very long because of the arthritis. So he's not interested in the spotlight. And this book, I don't know how much attention it'll get on a national scale. Most of the interest has been regional, such as from Jersey City or Charlottesville, Virginia, or Chicago, or Miami. It hasn't gotten a lot of national exposure, so probably a lot of people in L.A. have no idea there's a book. San Francisco, they have no. It's kind of like hit records back in the day in the 50s and 60s. You would have regional hits.
Yeah.
A record could be huge in Houston, like Huey's Cuckoo Over You was a big hit in Houston, and it was in Miami. But someone in Cleveland may never have heard it.
Yeah, you know, I had that record. I have that record, and I didn't realize when I bought it that the Hueys were Huey Piano Smith. Let me remind everybody, this is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. And our guest is John Word. He is author of Huey Piano Smith and the Rockin' Pneumonia Blues. It's a really fascinating book, like I said. You know, he's a deep, interesting character who, like I said, is obviously flawed in some fatal way here that, you know, it does seem like sometimes if everything bad is happening to one guy, the constant there is the one guy. And I don't know, you know, if he really is just bad luck or bad choices or some combination of all of the above. But it's certainly, like you said, it's a horror movie of a story. And millions of dollars that should have come to him did not come to him. And so it's just the typical story, you know. You know, although I always ask everybody, every artist I interview about money. And like Alan Toussaint said he's received all the money he was ever due. You know, he had no complaints about not receiving. So not everybody got ripped off.
A lot of people complain about not getting paid.
Yes.
Bo Diddley, for instance. he said the Chess Brothers made him and the Chess Brothers in Chicago destroyed him. You have that paradox.
Yeah, but then somebody uncovered some, like, royalty checks for Bo Diddley that were like hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, but yes, I'm sure he didn't get 100% of what was coming to him, or did almost anyone who's ever dealt with any record company.
Alan Toussaint is exceptional in that he's a guy that apparently did all the right things, and he's done extremely well in music, and he deserves it. He's a genius.
Yeah.
So.
Genius, yeah. Don't You Just Know It is the song I have queued up now. It's been covered a million times. I mean, it's just one of those songs that adapts so well to, you know, R&B and rock and roll, and even a country thing can get on it. It's just a fantastic song, and it just sort of encapsulates, I think, what Huey Piano Smith is all about. At their height, what was the show like when you went to go see Huey Piano Smith and the Clowns? How long was the show? How crazy did it get?
There's no film or video of a Huey Smith and the Clowns show that I'm aware of. So all I have are descriptions from Huey and Jerry Hall, who was one of the clowns, and other people who saw them. I heard there's a lot of dancing. They would sing the song, they would dance, they would clown around, they would come back to the song and finish the song. And I guess that's what they would do for all the songs. They would do. But there was a lot of dancing involved. And believe it or not, there is a video clip from 1958, the Dick Clark Saturday Beechnut Show. And it's Huey Smith and three of his clowns on the show. And it's not representative of what a clown's show actually would have been like. It was choreographed and arranged for TV because Huey is singing lead in Don't You Just Know It. But in fact, Bobby Marchand sings lead in Don't You Just Know It. And they just, again, they're all lip-syncing anyway, so I guess it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I wish, if I had a time machine, I would go
that,
and...
That clip exists, and a few people have it.
But not on YouTube yet. I have not seen
it. It's not on YouTube.
One of these
But
days.
I have seen it.
All right, I'm going to play this number one hit record from Huey Piano Smith. And John Word, I appreciate this. Like I said, fascinating book. It's published by Louisiana...
State University Press.
LSU Press. With a nice Fleur de Lis as a logo there. And folks, I put a link on the playlist for today's program where folks can, to the LSU site where you can read about the book or order yourself a copy. And you're working on something else?
I work at the Daily Newspaper in Baton Rouge, and we have our New Orleans edition, too, which is great.
All right. So next time you're down there, pick up the newspaper and read John Word's thing. Buy a copy of the book. I appreciate you not, you know, waking up a little bit early to speak to us this morning.
Oh, thank you, Michael. It's great to talk to you.
A pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
How can you let it go by you? Don't you dare.